Good morning, this is London. I'm going to be reading the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. We're going to begin reading from the front page, and our first article is titled Prison Program Inspires Teen. This is submitted by Claire Hettinger of the Herald and Review and comes out of Decatur. Effort keeps mom, daughter connected and paves path to Harvard. Before her mother went to prison, Olivia Weeks was a competent student, but not an outstanding one, certainly not one on track for an Ivy League education. Then her mother and only surviving parent, Tabitha Weeks, pleaded guilty in 2012 to aggravated DUI in the death of Craig Payne, 41, of Bonnie. She served 5 years at the Decatur Correctional Center and was paroled in January. When her mother left, Olivia Weeks, then 12 years old, made a choice to excel. She determined that she would not let the black cloud of judgment following her around her hometown of West Frankfort keep her from succeeding, and she would not let her mother's mistake wipe away all the good that she had done in her life. Despite all the ridicule, my mother's crime and subsequent punishment did not make me want to distance myself from her, Olivia Weeks told an audience of volunteers at the Decatur Correctional Center on Monday. It actually made me want to stand out as her greatest accomplishment, an endeavor which transformed me into the woman I am today. Soon, the senior at Frankfort Community High School will move on to a new challenge, Harvard University, where she will begin classes with a full-ride scholarship in August. My mother's imprisonment did more than just motivate me to prove everyone wrong, she wrote in the personal statement submitted with her Harvard application. It introduced me to my passions, opened my eyes to a deep well of injustice, and transformed me into a woman who has the skills and ambition to change the world. Olivia Weeks shared her story at the prison's volunteer awards banquet, saying she wanted to thank those who made it possible for her to have a relationship with her mother through the reunification program offered at the Minimum Security Women's Prison. Available to mothers who have children 17 or younger, the reunification program began in 2000 and allows children to spend time with mothers in a designated housing unit. They can talk, play games, work together on the child's homework, and even participate in counseling, Warden Shalith Hansbrough said. Most weekends, for 4 years, Olivia Weeks would make the 3-hour drive with a friend or a family member to see her mother. The two would talk, play cards, and even make yummy prison pizza, said Tabitha Weeks, 37. I left when she was 12, and that was a pivotal time in her life, and I was gone, Tabitha Weeks said. And when I left, I never imagined there would be a way for me to be with her. The activities and support would not be possible without the work of the volunteers, Hansbrough said. We thank you and appreciate you more than you could ever know, she said. Volunteers also lead book clubs, Bible studies, and gardening classes. In addition to providing other programs for mothers and children to remain connected. For example, Tabitha and Olivia Weeks also participated in the Mom and Me camp in the summer, which allows children to spend the day with their moms and then go camping at Lake Bloomington during the evening. Volunteers also help throw birthday parties, Christmas parties, and other events so that mothers and children can make happy memories. Moms can continue to be active in your child's life. Continue to parent even though you're not there with your child every night, Hansbrough said. You are still participating in their growth and development. Hansbrough said Olivia Weeks is a living testament to the fact that life in the Decatur Correctional Center affects children on the outside. But she also represents what can happen when volunteers and programming allow mothers and children to have a relationship. She also credited the accomplishments of Tabitha Weeks, who said she refused to give up. Tabitha Weeks said the reunification program gave her hope. "My imagination told me I would be looking at her through a glass," she said. "Then for me to find out that there was a way for me to have time alone with her was amazing." While she was in prison, Tabitha Weeks participated in a book club run by a volunteer. Olivia Weeks said the club introduced her mother to reading and opened her mind to new worlds. "One of the things that makes me feel closest to my mother to this day is discussing a story we've both recently finished," Olivia Weeks said. The book club ultimately affected Olivia Weeks's future after the mother and daughter both read Hillbilly Elegy, a memoir of a family and culture in crisis, by J.D. Vance, which describes the author's journey from poverty to an Ivy League education. In the book, Vance explained that an Ivy League education can actually be more affordable than one at a state school for people in poverty because of the financial aid packages that are available. This information encouraged the pair and helped lead to Olivia's Harvard application. Volunteers also helped Olivia Weeks and her mother connect after Olivia could drive herself to Decatur from West Frankfort. Because she was still just 16, Olivia Weeks needed to be checked into the prison by someone older than 18. The mother and son of the fellow inmate offered to help and met Olivia at the prison almost every weekend for 2 years to check her in and out so she could see her mother. "They volunteered their time to me for no purpose other than kindness, and because of it, my mom's prison sentence never prevented us from feeling close to each other," Olivia Weeks said. Olivia Weeks and her mother got to spend at least 9 hours together every month, no cell phones allowed. She said she sometimes wonders if that's even more quality time than other teenage mothers and daughters typically spend together. Tabitha Weeks said staff members also were a positive force who made it so that she could spend time with her daughter. "They went above and beyond sometimes of what their job description was," she said. "They listened when I had problems. They helped me get enrolled in college." Tabitha Weeks said she is attending John A. Logan College in Carterville and is finishing up an associate's degree in general studies. Though she described her relationship with her mother as unconventional, Olivia Weeks said it is also amazing and she's thankful for it. Her crime did not change the fact that for a girl who became pregnant at 18 and a single mother soon after, she did an amazing job, Olivia Weeks said. That concludes that article from the front page. The next article on the front page is titled Minority Hiring Reviewed. This is submitted by Tom Lisi for the Herald and Review and comes out of Decatur. Decatur meets one goal, falls short on subcontracting. 3 years after they created minority hiring goals for public works projects, city leaders say they exceeded one of their benchmarks but fell far short of another. Officials reported at Monday's Decatur City Council meeting that they have met the goal of hiring contractors to ensure at least 18% of their workers are minorities. But they also said that just 1.3% of all subcontracting work done as part of the public works projects was conducted by a minority business enterprise, a state certification for any business that is majority owned by a racial minority. The city's goal is 10%. "Honestly, I do not think we have had this structured to be successful," Councilwoman Dana Ray said during the council meeting. "It is 1.3% with no effort from the city to make sure this was done properly." Officials established the goal with the passage of an ordinance enacted 3 years ago requiring contractors conducting construction projects for the city's public works department to make a good faith effort to have 10% of its subcontracting work come from minority-owned businesses. But African American business leaders in Decatur have called into question how strongly the good faith policy is enforced, if at all. "I think they are scared to enforce the penalties," said Ingrid Smith, Economic Development Director of the Metro Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce. City staff members have sent out 3 letters of non-compliance to contractors. "I know there have been punishments, but that is one of the things we are looking at," said Deputy Manager Billy Tyus, "that we are encouraging the hiring, but also the compliance side." Decatur's ordinance requires contractors show their efforts to hire minority-owned businesses, but Daryl Reynolds, owner of the Decatur-based New Beginnings Contractors, said the city has not been doing that because city officials do not know if anyone has reached out to me, Reynolds said. City staff proposed several ideas to address the issue, including hiring a compliance officer, expanding the ordinance to other underrepresented groups, such as women or military veterans, or having a local mentorship program fulfill the ordinance's obligation. "Many people have great ideas, but perhaps not having that experience or expertise or opportunity," said Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. "I think we have got some really exciting possibilities." Councilman David Horn drew support from Smith and other Black Chamber members in attendance in arguing the city should not dilute the ordinance. "What are the barriers that are preventing 1.3% from becoming at least 10%? It would seem to me we have enough minority business enterprises to do better than that," he said. "We are asking for an opportunity. We are not asking for handouts," Reynolds said, "especially in a city where we pay taxes and live." That concludes that article, and it also concludes the reading from the front page. Moving into the state and local section, our first article is titled, "Patients Thrive Without Opioids." This is submitted by Georgette Braun for the Rockford Register Star and comes out of Rockford. Rockford orthopedic surgeon shares research at conference. An orthopedic surgeon who since October of 2016 has nearly stopped prescribing addictive opioid drugs says his patients are getting better faster. "It has been amazing," Dr. Mark Barba, a partner with Ortho Illinois, told me on Thursday. Barba performs hip and knee replacements. Barba spoke Wednesday at an opioid summit hosted by the University of Illinois College of Medicine at Rockford. The summit, attended by 180 physicians, nurses, and pharmacists, focused on what healthcare providers can do to reduce the prescription of opioids. In Winnebago County last year, 118 of the 124 overdose deaths involved the opiates, heroin, or fentanyl. Many of those who turned to the cheaper cheaper heroin to kill pain first became dependent on prescription opioids. Barba is among physicians nationwide who are prescribing fewer opioids. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said that the rate at which opioids are prescribed has declined every year since 2012. Even so, Winnebago County's rate is higher than the national rate. "When you look at opioids in Winnebago County, with so many overdoses, there is no one solution to the crisis," said Mary Moody, Assistant Dean for Business Development and Clinical Associate Professor at the University of Illinois at Chicago College of Pharmacy. She and Kevin Wren, Vice Dean and Clinical Professor at the College of Pharmacy, talked with me before the summit Wednesday. "Other options for dealing with pain include weight loss, physical therapy, acupuncture, or chiropractic treatment," Moody said. "These are things people can do, but they take more work than taking a pill," she said. "Clinicians also might reconsider whether it is necessary to prescribe 30-day supplies of opioids. The longer you are on it, Rin said, the more apt you are to become dependent. Studies have shown, however, that ibuprofen and plain Tylenol can be just as effective, Moody said. The opioid problem became bigger when pain became the fifth vital sign for health professionals to use in assessing a patient's well-being, Moody said. The other four are blood pressure, pulse, temperature, and breathing. We started assessing pain more closely, she said. The compounding factor is that everyone reacts differently to pain. Hospitals and insurers consider patient satisfaction when grading health professionals and reimbursing healthcare providers. John Freyna, president of the Freyna Group, a Rockford-based healthcare consulting firm, said the real issue is the smiley face approach. He was referring to the 10-point pain scale you see in the doctor's office. The happy face at the low end means pain-free, while the crying, sad face on the other end indicates excruciating pain. The easiest thing to do is write a script for an opioid to fix a patient's pain, Freyna said. Barbara, who has been practicing medicine in Rockford for 22 years, previously used morphine and Dilaudid for surgeries, but he stopped prescribing all but the milder tramadol to avoid the side effects of the drug dependence, the difficulty in getting patients off of it. They really do not provide great pain relief anyway, he said. Instead, he said that using Tylenol regularly before and after surgery is quite effective, and that an anti-inflammatory such as Advil can ease pain, and they are not addictive. Barba's shift away from prescribing opioids has produced dramatic results, he said. Patients wake up alert in recovery after surgery. They recover sooner and require less help from others. That concludes that article. Continuing in State and Local, our next article comes out of Newton and is submitted by the Herald and Review News Service. Two teens charged with killing pelicans. Information provided by the public has led to charges filed against two Newton teenagers in connection with the illegal shooting of American white pelicans at Newton Lake State Fish and Wildlife Area, discovered on April 3rd. In a news release, the Illinois Department of Natural Resources said charges were filed with the Jasper County State's Attorney's Office on Saturday following an investigation conducted by IDNR Conservation Police and the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. Because juveniles are involved in the case, their names have not been released by law enforcement. The two male teens are charged with unlawful take of migratory waterfowl with a rifle, unlawful discharge of a firearm from a public roadway, unlawful firing of a rifle over into waters of the state, and unlawfully disturbing and harassing wild birds by the use or aid of a motor vehicle, IDNR said. Five pelicans were found dead at Newton Lake on April 3rd by IDNR site staff. Another pelican found shot and wounded was taken to the University of Illinois College of Veterinary Medicine for treatment. And that does conclude that article. The next article in State and Local is submitted by the Associated Press, comes out of Chicago, and is High Court again rejects Blagojevich appeal. The U.S. Supreme Court announced Monday that it will not hear an appeal by imprisoned former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich of his corruption convictions, the second time in 2 years that it has declined to take up his case. The nation's highest court offered no explanation for its decision, letting stand the Chicago Democrats' convictions. They included seeking to trade an appointment to the Senate seat Barack Obama vacated to become president for campaign cash. Blagojevich, 61, began serving his 14-year prison sentence in 2012. His scheduled release date is 2024. His wife, Patty Blagojevich, said in a written statement that she and her two children could not be more disappointed in the decision. From the beginning, we have had faith in the system and have felt the court would bring Rod back to us, she said. Now, with the judiciary no longer an option, we will have to put our faith elsewhere and find another way. She did not mention President Donald Trump, but one option could be asking him to commute Blagojevich's sentence or to pardon him. Blagojevich was on Trump's Celebrity Apprentice reality television show in 2010. Blagojevich's lawyers argued the Supreme Court should take up Blagojevich's case to clarify what they argued are blurry lines between what constitutes legal and illegal political fundraising. And that concludes that article. And our final article on state and local, or out of state and local, is titled Advocates Require LGBT History. This is submitted by Bill Lukatich out of the Chicago Tribune and comes from Springfield. Opponents say lessons could hinder religious freedom. Gay and transgender rights advocates want to require Illinois public schools to teach students about LGBT history, as opponents say those kinds of decisions should be left to local officials. Legislation pending in Springfield would require a gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender section be added to the history classes and have school districts ensure textbooks accurately portray the diversity of our society. Supporters say the state already has similar rules requiring lessons on African Americans and other groups. They say a dedicated LGBT history unit would give students greater perspective on instrumental Americans whose stories often go untold. There is no justice for LGBTQ people who are erased from the study of history, said Brian Johnson, CEO of Equality Illinois. I'm sorry, that was CEO of Equality Illinois, a gay and transgender rights advocacy organization. But opponents say those lessons hinder the religious freedom of students with certain beliefs. Ralph Rivera, a lobbyist with the Conservative Illinois Family Institute, said adding LGBT education to public school curricula would promote a value system counter to the value system that those students have. Where is the protection for students and parents who have a religious belief? Rivera said, which has always been the case. This is not new. Avant-garde. This is thing that they find this behavior to be against their religious beliefs and their churches or synagogues' belief. No one seems to be mindful of that. They do not care. And the Illinois Association School Boards does not back the proposal either. It opposes most state requirements for schools, contending local officials can make the best decisions for their districts without lawmakers getting involved. You know, the fact that you would learn about Martin Luther King Jr. and learn about Coretta Scott King, but not learn about Bayard Rustin and his partners, it is just a sign that we are giving kids a lopsided view of history, he added. Rustin was a civil rights leader who was a chief organizer for the famous 1963 March on Washington, where the Reverend King gave his I Have a Dream speech. The proposal has won preliminary approval from Illinois House and Senate committees and could be debated further in the coming weeks. Under the LGBT History Bill, the Illinois State Board of Education would recommend resources for schools to develop a curriculum. Local school districts would be largely responsible for creating and administering the programs, which would include material to present significant contributions made by LGBT people and promotion of equal treatment of all people, regardless of sexual orientation or gender identity. The new requirement would not take effect until the 2019-2020 school year. That concludes that article, and it also concludes reading from the state and local. This week at the Herald and Review calendar, today, Senior Arts Class, 10 to 11:30 a.m., Decatur Area Arts Council, area code 217-423-3000. 3189, $5, ages 55 and older. On Wednesday, Flow Dance Class, 7 to 10 p.m., Prairieland Dance Club, Iliopolis, $5 to $10. Lesson followed by free line lesson and open country dancing. And on Thursday, Home Seller Workshop, 6 p.m. at the Decatur Public Library. Concludes the Herald and Review calendar. Next, we will read the obituaries for today, and the first one is for Paul Richard Jurgens, J-U-R-G-E-N-S. Paulie, age 67 of Decatur, Illinois, died April 12, 2018 at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Does not list any services. I'm sorry, it does. Services will be held at the American Legion Hall on Saturday, April 21st, 2018 at 1 p.m. And next we have Frances Darlene Dasenbrock, D-A-S-E-N-B-R-O-C-K, 66, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, April 15th, 2018, in Decatur Memorial Hospital. Services to celebrate Darlene's life will be at 10 a.m. on Thursday, April 19th, 2018, at G.T. Church, 500 South 27th Street, Decatur, with Pastor Matt Samuels officiating. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, April 18th, 2018, at the church. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery, and memorials are suggested to the wishes of the family in care of James Dasenbrock, and arrangements are by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, 2091 North Oakland Avenue, Decatur, Illinois. And that does conclude the reading of the obituaries for today. And a few corrections. In the Monday, April 16th edition of the Herald and Review, it was incorrectly listed that Manchester United won the Premier League Championship. Manchester City won the championship. The newspaper erred. In the Monday, April 16th edition of the Herald and Review, the wrong golf scores were listed for the RBC Heritage Final Round and the LPGA Lott Championship Final Round. The complete results are on page B2 of today's sports section. And in Monday, April 16th edition of the Herald and Review, the article Chain of Command incorrectly attributed quotes to Adam Peters that were said by John Walters. The newspaper erred. And the tax day quiz that appeared on page C5 of the April 15th Sunday Best section of the Herald and Review. In 1944, Congress raised the top income tax rate to 94%. Incorrect information was provided by InsideSources.com. So if you happen to hear any of those articles, those are the corrections. That concludes our reading from Part 1 of the Decatur Herald and Review for today, Tuesday, April 17th, 2018. We're going to take a short break and hope that you will return to listen to Part 2 in just a moment.